just to let some of the people who are listening to this year know, we're sitting outside, so it sounds a little loud. There's some construction going on. But two of our heroes, Yehuda and Yaakov, I can say their last names for privacy reasons, but Yehuda from the Five Towns, Yaakov from Brooklyn, you know who you are. You know, if you're listening to this year, you know who they are. And a mighty, mighty struggle to come back to yeshiva in the middle of this pandemic. They got back a week ago from New York, and they went right into seclusion in the yeshiva to Bidud. They're in their first week, finishing their first week. So, kol hakavod to you guys, the heroes of Eretz Yisrael, the end of two parashiyos about heroes of Eretz Yisrael. So on that note, there's a very interesting Rashi. We finally get the boundaries and the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It's a famously dislocated parsha. The boundaries and the borders should really have appeared in Parshas Pinchas. In Parshas Pinchas, the mechanism for allocating the land was described, the Goral. In Parshas Pinchas, the people who would receive the land was described. The people 20 and above were counted. In Parshas Pinchas, the laws of Yerusha were described. So why are the boundaries of Israel relocated from Parshas Pinchas to Parshas Maaseh? Not going to answer that question. Others should answer. It's a very important question. And the Torah introduces the boundaries by Zos Haaretz Asher Tipol Lachem Benachala. These are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael that will fall to you as an inheritance. So Rashi senses a strange, or there are a lot of strange verbs about the boundaries of Israel in particular, when the Torah describes the movement of the boundaries, the northern boundary, the southern boundary, the eastern boundary. You would say, Vahaya Gvul Tzafon, X, Y, and Z coordinates. Vahaya Gvul Mizrach, X, Y, and Z coordinates. Yet here, the Torah says, V'nasa, V'yatsa, V'yarad, V'tesolachem, Hisavisem. Very interesting that there are many, many colorful verbs describing the movement of the borders of Israel. The first verb that describes not a particular border, east, west, north, or south, but the entire concept of boundary and of land in Israel is the word tipolachem, or fall to. Where's it falling from? Earth isn't flat. Where's it falling from? You're entering the land of Israel, you're walking straight forward, and you're receiving land. So Rashi says something fascinating. He quotes a Medrash. Medrash Agada, he says, Al yedei shehipil HaKadosh Baruch Hu sarayim shel ayin umos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to reduce, had to diminish, had to defeat the heavenly representatives of the 70 nations min HaShemayim. V'kaftam lefnei Moshe, and he bound them in front of Moshe. Amar lo re'ei, ein b'hem od koach. Namely, who's falling? Not the land of Israel, but the representatives of all the nations who would otherwise resist our entry into the land of Israel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes their celestial representative and falls him and defeats him, ties him up in front of Moshe. Now he can enter the land of Israel. Now, let's first describe the Rashi, and then we'll talk about modernizing Rashi. So many Rashis have to be modernized to the current context. What's fascinating about Rashi is you would think, who's opposing the Jewish entry into Israel? Not 70 nations, but seven nations. The nations that lived in Canaan. But yet the Medrash talks about all 70 nations, which reminds us that there's something about world opposition to our presence in Israel that's already baked into human history and baked into metaphysical history. So even when we entered then, there were people that lived far off places whose celestial representatives were opposed to our entering the land of Israel. That's what Rashi, that's the Chiddush in Rashi, without having to modernize Rashi. Now, of course, we don't live that same metaphysical, supernatural reality. We don't really think about, well, who's the celestial representative of Russia? Who's the celestial representative of Peru? We live a more rational, cognitive style, but there's an opposition to our being in Israel. And then there's another part to what I think Rashi may not be alluding to directly, but I think is latent in some of what he's describing. It's not just that the fall of other nations or their celestial representatives is necessary for the Jewish people to come into Israel as a prerequisite because their opposition would impede us. But any nation that tries to settle the land of Israel and prevent the Jews from settling the land of Israel, they fall from their power, they fall from their glory. There's a fall that takes place when other nations oppose because Jews in Israel, it's part of the natural order. It's part of Maaseh Bereishis. It's like trying to say, I'm going to eliminate water from the world. I'm going to eliminate oxygen from the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world in which the Jews are supposed to be in Eretz Yisrael. First Rashi in the Torah. Why does the Torah begin with Bereishit? Not Chodesh Zelachem, because this is the land that I created, and I want the Jews to be in my land. I want them to be Lazarecha Atein, Nesaretz Hazos. And when you try to oppose that, either you fall in the way that Rashi describes, that Kadosh Baruch Hu defeated them so that Moshe could enter, or you just fall because you're countering the natural order. And if you look at all the empires who try to defeat us in this land, at some point, all the effort they invested in that process doomed them. Nebuchadnezzar was the indomitable leader of the entire empire until he destroyed Yerushalayim. And at that point, not just morally as a punishment, because he altered the world order. He could no longer be the leader of the world. Within a year and a half, he was raving mad, rambling through the jungle, if you study Sefer Daniel, what happens to Nebuchadnezzar. And the Roman Empire destroys Yerushalayim when about the year 130, the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. Around the year 171 is typically seen as the first moment that the Roman Empire starts to crumble. The emperor was Commatus, very, very failed leader. 410 is the sacking of Rome by the Visigoths. So essentially that 200-300-year process begins. And every kingdom and every empire, the Ottoman Empire, went as they first struck, and then all of a sudden World War I. And of course, it's not just because they tried to deter Israel, because then the Jews have to return to Israel, so it falls. Israel ceded to the British, and because of that Balfour Declaration. So it's not just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu supernaturally defeats these celestial representatives in order to allow the Jewish people to move into Israel, but any empire that tries to blunt the Jewish entry into the land of Israel will inherently fall. It's not the land of Israel that's falling, it's the efforts of others to prevent us, either because HaKadosh Baruch Hu blocks it, or because naturally those efforts are just doomed for failure, and then they drag down empires to try to prevent that. Okay, so that's one. That's one aspect of the Soviet Empire. To me, I always find it so ironic. 1985, Natan Sharansky walks across Checkpoint Charlie, which was the bridge or the area in eastern Germany that he walked across between West Berlin and East Berlin. In 1989, the wall falls down. Soviet Union was an empire built to last 1,000 years. We never could have imagined it disintegrating in 4 years after, because the Soviet Empire tried to prevent Jews from moving to Israel. And you can't stand in the way of history. You can't stand in the way. You will fall. Your empire will dissipate. That's one interesting Rashi. Another really fascinating Rashi. And I think Rashi feels we have to make a word change. Listen to this pasuk. Pasuk is the concluding pasuk about Ir Miklat, why there's a need to deal with death, innocent death, murder, manslaughter, whatever type of murder happens. And this is now a summarizing pasuk. Lo titamei es haaretz asher etem yoshvim ba. Don't impurify the land, because murder, death, and blood is, again, supernaturally, spiritually, creates absence of shlina. And of course, just socially, you can't have a stable society, people are killing each other. There's violence, there's attack. So you can't impurify the land, asher etem yoshvim ba, asher ani shochein besocha. And I want my shechina to be in this land. And your murder, if unattended, will distance my shechina, will expel my shechina. So be careful that you recover from murder, that you help people rehabilitate from murder, that you protect against murder, you protect against revenge murder of the Goel Adam. Be careful that you protect against bloodbaths, or else my shechina won't be there. So listen carefully. Asherni shochein b'socha. I want myself to be in Israel. I want the shechina to be in Israel. Therefore, you can't murder one another. Listen to the end of the pasuk. Keni Hashem shochein b'toch b'nei Yisrael, because I reside within the Jewish people. What does that add? The middle clause of the pasuk talked about Hashem being in Israel, therefore don't murder. And therefore I'm residing within the Jewish people. So listen to Rashi. It's a fascinating Rashi. Rashi says the first part is Asher ani shochein b'sacham in the land of Israel, shelo tashkin osi b'tumasa. You will not be able to draw my shechina to this land if it's tamei. So if it's tamei with death and murder, my shechina will depart. The end of the pasuk, Keni Hashem shochein b'toch b'nei Israel, af bizman shem tamei, even when you're tamei, I'm still within you. Namely, and I'll tell you how this comes across in the pasuk, Hashem can't be in this land if it's full of sin. But Hashem can still be within a human being if he's full of sin, within a Jew. If you sin, I will depart from the land, but I'll never depart from you. And don't feel that if you're a sinner, my shechina. At a global social level, we can expel the shechina, sadly, with our behavior. But the shechina is always within every Jew. So even though lo titamei saretz asher etem yoshvim ba asher nishochem b'zochai, I want my shechina to be in this land, and your murder will expel me, b'chol zos ki ani Hashem shochem b'toch b'nei Yisrael, which I think, if you take Rashi's pshat, means the word ki here, which we typically interpret to mean because, one of the interpretations of ki is even though, v'salachta la'avoni ki rav hu, not because it's so great, but even though it's so great. Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha, Hoshea says, ki chashalta bavonecha. One of the four meanings of ki is even though, despite. So I think that's what the word ki partially means in the pasuk. don't impurify the land because I want to be there. I am here in this land, and therefore be careful not to expel me. But even if you expel me from the land, I'll still be within you. And it's a really important modality when you sin, because when people sin, they feel like they're no longer close to Hashem. Hashem is no longer part of them. And no matter how much you sin, especially as Chassidus taught us, there's a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within each person that can't be in any way tainted or contaminated. So again, Rashi says, don't murder because I want my Shechina to be in the land, and your murder will distance me, and I can't be in the land that's Tameh, but I can be in you if you're Tameh. I can't be in the land that's Tameh. I can be in you if you're Tameh, and you'll never depart from me. Okay. One other very quick Rashi from Matos. Matos has the deal between Moshe and the 2.5 tribes. And Moshe is extremely pedantic about stipulating, we learned this year, the dinim of Tanai and the four different parameters in order to craft the Tanai based on Mishpatei Tanayim, based on the Tanai of Bnei Gad or Bnei Reuven. And Moshe is very explicit. He's very worried that when he leaves, when he retires, they're going to double cross, they're going to rescind, they're going to reverse tracks. So he's very explicit. And then he concludes and he says, Im lo tasun kein, he already says, if you follow through on your commitments, you'll get to return to the East Bank. Im lo tasun kein, this is Lamed Beis, Chav Gimel, then you won't get the land, you'll sin. So he stipulated both sides of the deal. If you follow through on your comment, on your promise, you get to go back to the East Bank. If you don't follow through, then you'll be a sinner. And then Moshe adds, so now, meanwhile, while you're still in the East Bank, you can go ahead and build homes. Moshe didn't prevent them from building homes. So you can build your homes, but then just when we're passed to the West Bank of Israel, West Bank of the Jordan, make sure you accompany us, let your children and wives stay in your homes, and then you'll return later. So, b'nu lachem, arim l'tapchem, mugderos l'tzonachem, and then Moshe concludes, v'hayotze mipichem tasu. Where'd that come from? Moshe already expected them to fulfill their promise. What is this extra clause? After all the stipulations have been made, v'hayotze mipichem tasu. So Rashi says, Rashi comments, v'hayotze mipichem tasu ligavoa. Your responsibility right now is not just morally to your brothers and your loyalty to them, and don't be cowardly while they're dying and fighting and you stay on the sidelines. Your responsibility is, you said something, you made a commitment, your responsibility to Hashem, v'yotzemi pichem tasu, and don't lose sight of that responsibility beyond the moral, loyal issue of you and your other Jews. And then Rashi continues, and I'll just paraphrase, and since you made a commitment to Hashem, now Moshe may or may not have said this, but clearly the 2.5 Shvatim fulfilled this. They stayed 14 years. If you look carefully at the conditions, they only committed to staying 7 years. That's how long it took to conquer the land. But in reality, historically, they spent another 7 years as the land was being allocated and settled and distributed and built and infrastructure. It took 7 years of Chalukah. 7 years not just to determine who will receive what land, but just essentially to establish colonies and tribes. And so they spent 14 years away from their family. Not 14 days, 14 years away from their family. And this extra 7 years, Rashi says, I'm just explaining to Rashi, wasn't necessary because of the moral, legal commitment that Moshe had enacted. It was because that to fulfill Hashem's expectations. And Hashem's expectations pushed them beyond. And I think it's important because we all believe there are moral prerogatives in our world that are independent of the Torah. We'd want to be kind people. We'd want to be considerate people. We want to be respectful people. Even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't deliver the Torah, we believe that human beings can discover morality, and we want to draw from those moral expectations and social conventions. But we can never top off or max out at those. We have to say, well, okay, I fulfill my responsibilities to my society, but what are the absolute, objective, never-ending moral responsibilities to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And here there's a concrete distribution. The first 7 years were their responsibilities morally and contractually. The next 7 years, like Tzvei Dinim, next 7 years are their responsibilities to HaKadosh Baruch Hu beyond the moral and social considerations. I think in life, some people think that there's no morality outside of Hashem's will. Obviously, Hashem's will encompasses all morality, but Hashem planted moral instinct in human beings even without His revealed word. So even people that understand that Har Sinai still have moral instincts, where do they get it from Hashem? There's no morality outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but there's a morality outside of the revealed word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on human instinct that HaKadosh Baruch Hu also created. And we're going to be sensitive to that. But ultimately, we can't, sometimes social standards, level off moral responsibility. Well, no one else is doing this. Why should I? No one else is following the law. Why should I? No one else. So you may have fulfilled your responsibility socially, societally, and interactively, but you always have to feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking down at you and having expectations. And for those 7 years, they say, well, we don't have to be here. So we made a commitment to Hashem. It's not just a commitment. So much of this parsha is the contract between the Jews and the God of Bnei Reuven, Chasi Shev and Menashe. Here, the Torah Moshe saying, by the way, don't forget. Don't forget the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So three interesting Rashis. One interesting Rashi about the fallen opponents of Israel, Tipol Lachem. One Rashi about the contrast between HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina being inconsistent with an impure land, but still being retained in an impure person. And then finally, their responsibilities to their fellow man, but the responsibilities of morality that took them 7 years to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to that higher calling, even within a moral interaction. Some people divide Ben Adam Lachem and Adam Lachaveh. Okay, I'm putting on tefillin, Ben Adam Lachem. Those two compartments or compartmentalization can become very, very misleading, because even when you're involved in morality, you're involved in Adam Lachem. Okay. That's a wrap.